One thing worth a rant is compensation in sports. Specifically, though, I want to talk about how players get paid in tennis. Top player Novak Djokovic and others have actually proposed a breakaway players' union from the ATP. The ATP is the men's international governing body, and they're citing getting paid as one of their key concerns. While watching the Pro Tour restart the other day, I saw that Scottish National Heritage site and newly rebuilt Bionic Man, metal hip and all, Andy Murray has made about $60 million from prize money in his career. And as one of the big four of men's tennis for the last 10-15 years, he's one of the top earners for sure. Money from sponsorships and other endorsements in tennis far outweighs the prize money for top athletes. De facto ambassador of Switzerland and champagne salesman Roger Federer is right up there with other top earners from other sports, like Ronaldo and LeBron. In 2019, they all earned close to or more than $100 million. But unlike the stars of football and basketball, tennis players earn far less from a salary. Roger earned just a measly 8% of his $93 million last year from prize money. Now we can compare that to Brazilian superstar Neymar, who earned almost three-quarters of his income from his salary paid from his club. But let's say you're a bit further down the list than the greatest tennis player of all time. How are things down for you there at, let's say, 125th in the world? Well, you might actually be losing money and going into debt just for a shot to compete. You've got to pay for flights, your coach, a trainer, hotels, medical expenses, all sorts of stuff, shoes, thousands of dollars a week just to play. And that's pretty expensive to just go out in the first round of the US Open, right? And that's if you can even make it to the Big Slam tournaments. But if you did, this year you would earn $61,000 for losing in the men's draw in the first round. Which sounds like a lot to just lose a match, right? And it is. And I think most people would be willing to have Nadal or Djokovic run them off the court for an hour just to be paid that much. But to put it in perspective, that's not much compared to the total revenue earned by the tournament. In 2009, the US Open pulled in over $370 million. Yep, a single two-week tournament in Queens earns that much. Even with the winner earning a hefty $3 million in prize money this year, that's still less than 1% of their total revenue. Only about 15% of the $370 from last year was actually paid out to players. Now the problem here is that professional tennis is essentially freelance. This structure rewards those at the top, but provides very little for those even a little lower down. The difference between number 5 and number 50 is enormous. I mean, Richard Gasquet isn't exactly a household name, is he? What's missing in any industry dominated by freelance is the environment for collective bargaining. While the popularity of labor unions has waned in past decades, you still see them going strong in many other top-tier sports, especially in the US. The NFL, NBA, baseball, and hockey all have powerful player organizations who negotiate with the leagues and the team owners. And they set out guidelines, especially when it comes to minimum and maximum compensation. And this helps individual players advocate for what's better for the majority of players, not just those at the top. Now, freelance makes sense when the agency of the individual gives them more options. In tennis, players can pick and choose which tournaments to enter, to some degree. But every player still wants to win at the big slams. There aren't enough big tournaments to reward players for choosing alternative schedules. And while tournaments are changing, there's still a long way to go. For example, the run-up event to the US Open this year paid just 6% more than last year, but 75% less to the actual winner. That means they're distributing those winnings more equitably across the rest of the player base. But who cares, right? I mean, tennis is just some country club sport for rich kids anyway. But tennis is just an example of what happens when you reward people exponentially rather than something more even. Should a CEO really make thousands of times more than an average employee? Are pilots, teachers, accountants really worth that much less than the management at the top? Perhaps organizations should experiment with different compensation strategies. Say, something logarithmic. In this kind of approach, getting through the first couple of rounds of a tournament or going from an associate to a senior position in a company would make a huge difference to the individual. But the more levels beyond that are not rewarded more and more and more. Now who knows if this works in all situations or for tennis, but I think for the sport it's imperative that there are enough players to keep it alive. And myself, I'm a bit skeptical that this is what Djokovic and others really have in mind for this move, but still, it's obvious that there is change needed. And that's one thing COVID has highlighted in so many areas. And let's not even get started on the pay gap between men and women. Even the biggest Roger fan in the world Hi, Mum. Needs a healthy player base for him to play against. And in the end, we have to believe what's good for the majority of players is probably best for the sport in the long run. Thanks for listening to One Thing Worth a Rant by me, Jeremy Pennycook. Now, go pick up a racket and play some tennis. Social distancing is practically built into the sport, so enjoy it. Talk soon.